Hey, it's Kate and Simon ahead of this month's hour-long talk show.
We're here just to give you a quick warning that later, after Jack's done his social media bit, we're going to be talking about eating disorders.
It's the story of a comedian who's had difficulties with food and body image. She talks really humorously and intelligently, but it does have some tough moments.
If you're not up to listening to that right now, then the second half of the show's not for you.
So just skip it, it's fine. Message over. Now, on with the show. And thanks for joining us. It's Ouch's talk show for September. I'm Kate Monaghan.
And I'm Simon Minty. And if this is a show you've never heard before, we talk about disability stuff in sometimes serious, sometimes silly.
Always fun.
Oh, like your style. We have three guests with us, but we're going to hear a lot more from them shortly. But first of all, just a quick hello to Alan Benson.
Hello.
Joanne McNally.
Hiya.
And Jack Binstead.
Hello there.
Simon, we've not been here for a month, so what have you been up to? I hear you've had a new addition to your body.
No,
let's leave
edgy.
It at that.
I was going to say, our show's about life. You've had a new addition as a little baby bubba, and I'm still alive after my hip surgery.
Yay!
Yay!
No one ever thought it would happen, but you're still here.
Everyone else did, and I didn't.
You thought you were going to die.
I did. There was a good chance of it, yeah.
Did you really seriously think you were going to die?
I thought there was a substantial... Because of my condition, dwarfism, and the particular one, SED, anaesthetics... a little bit more risky for me, and breathing and so on. So I do know people who have died, because it's not been done very well. My team are amazing, and I hammered it home. So
what did you have done?
Oh, sorry, a new hip.
Oh, fancy.
Oh, yeah, you know.
Bionic now, then?
No, that's a bit daft, isn't it? No, it's just titanium ceramic. But it's great. 7 weeks in, doing all right.
Are you quite... I mean, I'm not saying you're young, but aren't you quite young for a hip replacement?
You give it and take it away.
Yes, I do.
Yeah, but it depends on your argument. It might last 10, 15 years, fine. Maybe even longer these days, 20. It depends what you do. But also, what am I supposed to do? Wait another 20 years of excruciating pain and not being able to do anything? That's crazy talk.
So are you feeling better?
I am. I'm probably where I was before. I still need to use a stick, still have a bit of pain. But I can get up and I can move around like I never could before. It's just a bit weird. I'm doing these little exercises. But enough about me. What happened to you?
Oh, nothing really.
Stop
just,
it.
You know, just a big
circle
life changing
of life.
Thing.
I was going. You're bringing you one in.
Yep. You were off, and I was bringing a baby into the world.
How are you doing with that?
Oh, it's really good.
What's the little baby's name?
She's called Scout, and she is 5 weeks old, and she is beautiful. She did her first smile yesterday, and that was quite a special moment.
Really cute.
I mean, I'm not going to lie, it's hard work. And when you have a chronic pain thing, it's really hard work because you need to sleep to sort of repair your body, and you just don't get the chance to do that. So you sort of, you know, you keep going and you keep going, but it's all worth it.
Just for those who are listening, where's Scout from then? It's not Cub Scouts.
No, it's a literary reference, Simon, which you did not get. It's from To Kill a Mockingbird.
I knew that. I knew it was...
Did you?
No, I do
no,
now.
No, you didn't, yeah.
I have read it.
And she's so great. I'm hoping she will be as great as Scout is in that book.
Is she the lovely little girl who...
Yeah, who fights for
yes,
people.
Yes, amazing.
And, yeah. Let's introduce you to our guest now. Do you recognise the name of Scout?
No. Well,
no,
I've
Jack.
Heard the name Scout, but not from...
Not from
the literary
book.
Reference you've taken it
Alan?
From.
Yeah, Jack, he's on my side.
I have to admit, never read To Kill a Mockingbird.
Oh, Joanne, help me out here.
To Kill a Mockingbird is one of those books that I've always pretended that I've read, but never actually read.
Oh.
It's up there with them, Ulysses, and there was another one that I always pretend that I've read. I can't remember now. So, yeah, I'm totally familiar with Scout. Great character. Loved the book.
You know my little child I've called Heathcliff. It's working out.
Jane Eyre. They're always those kind of like, do you know when the people do surveys they send around, oh, how many of the top books have you read? People just lie. Like, everyone's just lying.
All
people
right,
have read
fine.
Bridget Jones, and that's about the max of it, I'd say.
And on that note, let's introduce our guest properly. On the line from Dublin, we've got Joanne McNally. Joanne, how are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. How are you guys?
We are very well. Now, you've got a one-woman show about having eating disorder therapy.
Yes, I do. It's called Bite Me. And it's in the Dublin Fringe Festival this year on September 21st to September 24th, if anyone is passing through the city.
And is it serious or is it fun?
No. So it's kind of an irreverent look at eating disorders. I suffered with anorexia and bulimia for many, many years, but mostly bulimia, really. And I kind of spiralled out of control and it all went very dark and I had to leave work and go into treatment and all that jazz. But I'm a comedian. Well, I wasn't working as a comedian at the time because I wasn't working because I was out of my mind. But I wrote about it at the time and it's kind of a funny way. It's telling the story in a funny way. Because
let's save people, you, Joanne, because we're going to come back and interview you properly and you're going to do
it. Oh, right,
it.
That was just my name and stuff there, was it?
Yeah.
Joanne, Dublin. Talk to you later.
No, it was really
an Irish woman.
Don't mind me.
I feel terrible interrupting. But Jack Binstead, star of BBC Three comedy series Bad Education, we like to drag you in and get you to look up disability stories on the internet.
Definitely.
Because you're young.
Yeah, I know.
You're the youth. So, you know, somebody's got to bring that element to the show.
Always on social media.
Without going into all the stories, what have you been up to since we last saw you in July?
I've been writing for some new comedy. Right. So I've spent a lot of my time doing that. A couple of auditions, a little bit. So,
anything
yeah.
you can talk about?
I had sticking with stand-up, I had an audition for a TV series. Not too sure what channel, wasn't told me. But it's about an up-and-coming stand-up comedian who suffers. He's sort of very socially inept. You know, he doesn't really...
Sounds about right for you.
It's me, basically.
Actually, yeah.
And, he gets on stage and it's all about his journey. And so I haven't really heard back yet.
Fingers crossed.
Other than that, just gym and comedy.
Gym and comedy.
That's me.
Story of my life, too. And Alan Benson is the chair of Transport for All, a group which campaigns for accessible public transport in London. Hi, Alan.
Hello.
Now, we've got you in to help us chat through a new trial starting this month by Transport for London, something that I have been hoping for years. I can't tell you how excited I am about this. Now, don't switch off, listeners. I know it's a London thing that we're talking about, but there is a much more interesting, wider discussion here. And it's all about people with hidden disabilities like me. Now, for the record, Simon, your disability, not so hidden.
Yeah, so when I first heard about this, because it kind of instinctively brings reactions, I don't, mine is visible. Jack, your visible impairment.
People
can tell when they see you.
Yeah.
Because you're in a wheelchair, so. Simon,
get straight
you're
to
short.
The point, yeah.
You're short.
And I'm using my crutches just to show people. I just think this is the whole visible.
You're disabled?
Not visible.
I thought you was 12. What? Oh, right, okay.
All right, easy with the guest.
Never mind.
You think this is straightforward, but it isn't. So we're going to get into it a little bit. By the way, I do love Transport for All. I remember first getting involved in disability stuff, and Transport for All was one of those first ones.
So I can't sign you up then? You're already engaged?
I am already engaged with it. I haven't done anything, but I just like what you do. Put it that way.
We'll talk afterwards.
I mean, but Alan, yours is also a visible disability. So
I sit in my in my bad chairs.
You take your seat with you, so you don't need anyone to give you one. So the idea of this is that Transport for London have introduced a badge that says, "Please offer me a seat." They're kind of similar to the very popular baby on board badges, which are for pregnant ladies and people can know to offer them a seat. But they're being trialled from next month to help passengers who need a seat but often have difficulty getting one on a crowded bus or train. So the idea is that you don't need to talk about it. People will see the badge and say, "Here, give me a seat." Now, this is something that I have been very excited by. I have wanted for ages. I was given a badge this weekend and I used public transport this morning to get to the podcast and I did a bit of recording on the tube.
Standing in front of people, see if they notice anything.
Train is about to depart. Stand clear of the doors. When the doors. Do not obstruct the doors. Stand.
Oh yeah.
Clear
thank
of the
you.
Doors. Thank you.
Why did you offer me a seat?
Because of your badge.
Do you know what the badge means?
Perhaps that you cannot speak up that you need it.
Brilliant.
Why not to help each other?
Thank you very much. So yeah, that worked really well. The train is really busy, and somebody noticed that I needed a seat, and now I'm sat down happily. So yeah, amazing.
So yeah, I was pleasantly surprised. I couldn't quite believe that somebody actually knew what the badge meant, because they haven't even started putting posters up and doing any press around it other than the original.
It's self-explanatory, though. Well, it does... me a seat.
Yeah, but people might think, why do you need a seat? Like, that's what I was worried about, that people wouldn't understand why I needed a seat to be offered to me, I guess. But no, it was brilliant. The woman saw me, I had my badge on, and she said, oh, here, do you want my seat? So it was brilliant.
It sets out to do.
It is, exactly. So the badge is like a little pin badge. It's quite small, and it just says, it's blue, and it just says in white, please offer me a seat. So what I was hoping for, I think, was a badge that said less able to stand, so that people would see, you're less able to stand, therefore I will offer you a seat. But this is a bit more direct. Gimme a seat, basically, is what the badge says. And it was brilliant.
See, to me, less able...
Everyone's looking at me really incredulously, and I don't know why.
Less able to stand, for me, I feel like that would be more effective.
Why is that?
Because please give me... I mean, anybody, regardless of hidden disability or able-bodied, can put on a badge. You know, anyone can say that, less able to stand, really, but you wouldn't wear that badge if you didn't have a disability, you know.
What happened to you then saying, excuse me, can I... take your seat, because we've got our headphones in now, our Kindle, so we even less interaction with anybody. It's just to avoid any conversation.
Basically, I find that people don't make eye contact with you on the tube. They try to avoid looking at you, speaking to you, obviously. But also, I feel very exposed by going up to somebody and saying, I can't stand, please can I have your seat? Whereas the badge made me feel like I don't actually have to say anything. It's all there for you to see. Just like, if you want to give me your seat, because then you're not risking that thing of, what's wrong with you? Why do you need the seat? No, I'm not going to give it to you. If somebody sees a badge and decides not to give it to you, you don't have to have that horrible interaction with them.
It's an incredibly British thing,
isn't it?
Not to want to go and say to somebody, can I have a seat? You know, all over the tube, all over buses, you don't engage with people when you're travelling.
Mm.
It's not just in London, it's all over the country. So this is that icebreaker.
From Transport for All's perspective, I don't know if you can speak for the whole organisation, but is this a win for you guys? Is this something that you were hoping for? Are you happy with it?
So it's something that our members, have debated for a long, long time. And I should say right up front that we're supportive of the initiative. So we think TfL have done a good thing. It's a step forward. We certainly have members that have made their own badges. So things like autistic, just to make it clear to people, just to break their ice and encourage people to give up their seats. But there is also a large or a significant contingent of people that don't want to be labelled. They don't want to be wearing a badge that says, hey, I'm disabled. They'd much rather, you know, get through life without that.
But surely it's good to have the badge so that those who want... Nobody's forcing disabled people to wear it, so...
I think there should be a spotlight on people with hidden impairments. Then beep, 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 like that.
Yeah, great. That would be fab.
Your radar just goes off.
Yeah, if you want it, then wear it. And if you don't, you don't... Nobody's going to force your members to wear it.
So if we're not careful, Godwin's law applies, which is the law that says any internet discussion, if it goes on long enough, we'll turn to Hitler and
yes,
Nazis.
Yes, okay, okay.
And, you know, the whole idea of being
forced... Oh, jeepers, that's where you're going there. Yeah,
being forced to wear a badge is just not somewhere any of us want to go.
But this is where I get... And is it people with non-visible? Can I call it non-visible rather than hidden? Because that means you're trying to...
Hide it.
Yeah, exactly. Is it? But the three of us have visible impairments, and you know we don't have a badge saying "Don't look at me" because it's visible.
Yeah,
it's a kind of, we just deal with it. Whereas people with non-visible, they're half in the disability club, but they've obviously got some impact, but they don't want to come. What happened to disability pride, Kate? Where's your pride?
But I'm showing my pride by having my badge on. I'm saying, hey, I'm part of your club. Go on, Joanne.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, right, sometimes, first of all, if anyone has, if there's anything visible that you think that they're struggling to stand, if you don't offer them your seat, you're a horrible person. But the other thing is, sometimes I'd see people on buses or trains and I'm not sure if it's impolite to offer my seat. If it's like, if I'm patronising them or I'm disrespecting them.
Yeah, so it's,
if someone's
like
wearing
the baby thing. You know,
what
like,
do you mean?
Well, the thing where people are pregnant and you're not 100% sure if they're pregnant.
Yeah,
yeah, I like that idea.
You should, you know, the badge says, yes, I am pregnant, because otherwise you can risk offending people. Yeah. And
I didn't just have a massive lunch. I am actually pregnant. But if someone was wearing a badge saying, please offer me your seat, I would just do it. Like, monkey see, monkey do. I would just do it. Whereas if they're wearing a badge saying, less able to stand, again, I don't know, did they just come from a concert? I wouldn't know what that would mean.
How long
I want to be told. Like, if you're going to do it, just be direct.
Well, I guess that's why Transport for London have done it this way.
And
I think it's brilliant.
Is it impossible to say, excuse me, do you mind if I have your seat? Is it? I mean, I don't use London Underground, I guess.
It's hard, yeah.
I remember in New York, I got on a bus with another wheelchair user. As soon as we got on, the people in the front seats all jumped up, the seats were pushed up, and then we're in. And then in San Francisco, they have the wheelchair spot, and as soon as you get on, there's loads of people with bikes, push bikes, pedal bikes. They all completely move out of the way. So but they just, you know, in the States, people just move out of the way. Because it's visible, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's the invisible
You've got visible is very...
Is it a fine, though, in the US? Is that...
I think
like $50 or $500? Or I don't know, is there some penalty?
I think...
For what? For not giving up your seats?
Yes. Yeah.
No way!
Yeah, it's right.
It's about 2009, I believe, it was introduced.
Oh, how... God, Simon, your knowledge is just
incredible
right there. Yeah.
I find asking for help on public transport to do with my disability, being in a wheelchair, puts me in situations that I don't want to be in. Like, if I get on with it myself and get on a train, I would stand up and just lift my chair onto the train. I can go on any carriage I want to. I can sit wherever I like. I once asked a guy if he'd put the ramp out for me. He said, yeah, I'll put you somewhere really comfortable. What he meant by that, I was unsure of until he put me in the carriage on the train with the bikes.
Yeah.
So by comfortable, he meant I'll just put you with everything else that also has wheels and left me there for the journey. And it was like, you know what, if I had just done this myself, I'd be engaging with other human beings right now.
I feel similar to Jack. If I have to ask for help, I would rather avoid the situation.
So I'm in the supermarket and there'll be five things on the top shelf. So two things happen. I will say to somebody, could you pass me that? I can't believe Jack's even laughing.
I'm just picturing you trying to climb the shelf.
Because you are short. Like,
yes, it's reaching. I don't need to explain everything. although I am perfectly confident with my impairment, unlike other people. So the point is, I will say, could you pass that to me? And people go, yes, I can. Or people come up and say, do you want a hand? And they go, no, I'm okay, thanks. So it's not that difficult.
How many people do you ask for help and they go, no.
How many have said no?
You've said, can you reach that from the top shelf? And they've looked at you and they've gone, no.
No one has ever said no. One guy came up afterwards and found me in the shop and said, you made my day. And because he was about 5'2", and he said, no one ever asked me that. So he made me really happy.
Do you want a badge that says, please pass things to me from the high shelves? Would that help? Little badge?
It's back to this visible, non-visible, hidden thing. No, because it's obvious.
Yeah.
But yeah. I kind of still think there's a...
People don't say no if you ask them for stuff. Whereas if you've got a hidden disability and you say, can I have the seat, please?
Yeah.
People turn around and go, well, why?
Yeah.
I mean it. I was
That's
here
exactly
first.
Right.
But hang on, so someone parks in the blue badge disabled bay and they jump out of their car and they go skipping into the store. Are we supposed to approach them? Or could they have asthma, could have a heart condition? Do we just let them go? What are we supposed to do?
You've got to let
Who's
them go
the police
because it's not our place to police. Exactly, it's not our place to police.
Well, I've genuinely got out of the car, though, when people have stopped in disabled parking bays and questioned them.
Yeah.
I have done that. And I've found, you know, out of the five or six times I've done that,
is that
four of them, they haven't had blue badges and they've gone, OK, I'll move. And I parked there.
But that's different if they don't have a blue badge.
But I didn't know that until I approached them, so I really could have been approaching somebody who had an invisible disability.
Yeah, but you should check their car first.
How stringent, Alan, how stringent is the application process?
I've not been through it. Kate, you've been through it. What did you find?
Oh, I haven't actually. My producer just rang up and got me one.
So there's going to
be perks of the job.
There's going to be all these walkie-talkies sitting down everywhere.
So Southern and
Govia
Thames Link have had a please give me a seat card for a while.
Yeah.
And the process for that is... You've got to apply with a photo, so it's a photo card.
I meant
so that's
more,
quite involved.
But how do you show you actually have something that says you need that? Suitcase?
Well, that's what the application form
right
for Govia
says. So you get
says.
PIP or DLA or something that
something.
Well, I think the application process is going to be an interesting one, because obviously you're going to have to prove that you have a disability in some way. Because the thing that would put me off the Southern Rail card is I still wouldn't want to go up to somebody and show them a card.
No.
The badge is very different. And
yes.
I'm sort of getting it. You want to be visible.
Yeah. In some circumstances, it's really helpful for people to understand that you have a disability that they can't see.
Mm. Why shouldn't it apply in other situations as well?
Mm.
So if you're waiting in a doctor's waiting room and there's no seat, why shouldn't people get
you
up
go
there?
To the theatre?
Or to the theatre, or to the pub?
Yeah.
You know, some of us can drink.
It's true, yeah.
But hang on, I think there's something quite deep and profound here. So non-visible impairment, occasionally I want people to know without me having to go through it. The flip side would be having my particular impairment, and maybe you guys, sometimes being so visible and obvious is tedious, and the idea that you could hide it in some way without having to go through a ruined conversation with everybody would be great too.
I feel like I've had a badge on for 19 years.
And exactly.
My wheelchair is my badge.
So I want a hidden impairment suit.
Yeah.
So I suddenly look like I'm not...
Why is it tedious?
Oh, on the spot. Non-visible impairment. No, because we'd never understand.
Is it people taking photos of you?
Well, obviously that's got worse with the invention of the smartphone. And I should qualify, it's not everybody's like this. But no, you guys will know this, you are the centre of attention when you go down the street because you're different.
Oh, and you hate being the centre of attention.
Sometimes I love it, but I want to be able to switch it off.
Yeah.
And that's what I can't do.
I never want to switch it off.
No, I was going to say, Jack over here.
I'm never going to switch it off.
Is it different for you, Jack, because you are famous from television now, so you've got a reason to
Quite possibly, yeah. I mean, I don't get a lot of... People look over at me, and I don't know whether it's because they're curious about the chair or they know who I am or whatever, but when it comes to disability and my wheelchair and my disability in general being the topic and the reason I am being stared at for whatever reason, I honestly have no qualms with that, you know.
Alan, what do you think?
People are really kind. They come along, they try and help, and they get in the way.
Mm.
And it that invisibility suit, or that you know, that whole you can't tell my disability. Sometimes you just like to flick the switch and say, no, I'm all right, thanks, and not have to explain yourself or you know, push people away, because they're genuinely trying to help. They're genuinely trying to be nice.
Mm.
And to turn around and say, no, bugger off, you feel really rotten sometimes.
Mm. Well,
I mean, I'm curious, though. Do you get extra points for having a baby on board badge and
give
them a seat?
Yeah, nice.
That would
Do you
be
get
great.
Guaranteed a seat then?
Surely.
Why stop at badges? Let's make t-shirts and hoodies. And just like
you guys might not need it, but I'm going to wear my please give me a seat badge
with some
with
pride.
Yeah,
and I like
I
that.
Really
That's
am.
Badge right. pride.
Badge pride, exactly.
You can email ouch@bbc.co.uk, tweet @bbcouch, or find us on Facebook. We had a nice mail from someone called Jeff Rahn from Boulder, Colorado, lovely part of the world. He says, I've listened to several of your podcasts on disabilities and mental health issues. Exceptional. As Robert Frost once said, no tears in the writer, no tears in the reader, no surprise in the writer, no surprise in the reader. Good stuff.
What does that quote mean, do you think? What's he saying there?
I think it was Scouts from Kill 'Em Mockingbird.
Kill 'Em Mockingbird. That's the way I
took it. Was there, we don't get too slashy and sentimental. We kind of stay on a level. Hopefully we have some depth, but not too...
Mm.
What do you think?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm going to cry my way through my interview now.
Thanks, Joanne.
I'm going to get hysterical.
And we'll go, no!
My pain.
This email is about one of our weekly Inside Ouch podcasts from August. It's from Claudia Jurisic, and she says, although I'm not currently disabled, I really enjoy listening to the podcast. I was listening to your most recent podcast on my way to work this morning, and one of the guests said that the Spanish for disabled toilet is, and now get my amazing Spanish here, incapacidad lavabo. Mm-hmm. Sounds like a spell from Harry Potter to me, but this literally translates as disability washroom, and it sounds clunkier in Spanish than in English. I think the best translation would be eso para discapacitado, or eso para personas con discapacidad, which means toilet for disabled person.
Your accent got better.
My Spanish.
Welcome up, Dora the Explorer is in the building. Yeah.
Super proud of. So the guest in question that Claudia is talking about was Jamie McDonald, who was talking to Emma Tracy about his Edinburgh Fringe show. So we've put that straight, kind of, with my terrible accent, unless you have another suggestion. So, yeah, please let us know what disabled toilet is in your given language, and I will give it a bash to say it right now. Brilliant.
<Yeah. laughs> Do we know any other...
No, I don't. I speak Essex. That's about it, really. It's as far as I go, really.
Sable bog.
Yeah.
I used to know a guy, an English guy, who swore he spoke German, and he called it the Pissenhausen. But I'm not sure that was really true.
Joanne.
Yes.
Anything on the international phrases for disabled youth?
No, I don't. I have nothing to offer on that one. Nothing.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
I only speak five languages.
We're serving the listeners with this. Mm. But anyway, contact us. We love hearing from you. You're listening to Ouch! Disability Talk from the BBC. Coming up...
There's always ways to turn it round. At peace from the time to time.
That's Joe Kenny with Turn It Round, and you can hear that at the end of the programme in full with the obligatory rundown of his disability credentials, because we have to do it. Our producer makes us.
Still to come, stand-up comedian Joanne McNally talks about the therapy she received for her eating disorders. It's both bizarre and fascinating, so stay tuned for that. But now, Jack Binstead. Hi there, Jack.
Hello.
You've got some stories you've been tracking on social media, and the first, it should be going on now, the Paralympics, the big disability event in Rio.
Yes.
The build-up, not so positive.
Yeah, 2012 was a very, very amazing turnout for the Paralympics, one of the best turnouts we've ever had. And so everybody went into Rio expecting to have the same sort of outcome, you know, and with just days until the opening ceremony, less than half of the 2.5 million tickets on offer have not been sold. So currently, the stadium is looking pretty bare for the opening ceremony, and half the tickets. Some of the tickets have been dropped as low as £2.
What?
And they still haven't been sold yet.
That must be soul-destroying for the athletes. But but in the Olympics, even the Olympic stadium, you know, the stadiums during the Olympics, they looked bare on TV. They look like half full.
Yeah.
And I just don't understand it.
Yeah, if that's to do with the location of the Olympics, London being maybe slightly more iconic,
I think
for sport.
Brazil, they just love football. That was, exactly, all the chat was, it was football, football, football. They weren't really interested in other sports, perhaps, before.
But, I mean, what I know, I've got loads of friends who have just flown out to Rio for the Games in all different kinds of sports. And from what I gathered, they're all excited. They're not being brought down by this.
I hope it picks up. I mean, I always thought with London, London was such a success, and the bar went so high. Mm. And I also, I'm shooting myself in the foot here, everyone wanted Olympic tickets, or a lot of people did, so I subscribed. I'm sure the Paralympics, part of the success was we thought, well, if we can't go to the Olympics, I'm going to go to the Paralympics.
Yeah.
People were just, you could get tickets more easily for that, so it was
I think I only know people who went to the Paralympics, and that's...
The same for me.
Yeah,
anyway.
Everyone went to the Paras.
I think in London... A lot of people came to London from, you know, other cities. I'm not sure how much of that is going on in Brazil.
Right.
You know, there's an awful lot of, you know, shanty towns, very, very poor areas, where people just can't or aren't prepared to travel to either the Olympics or the Paralympics.
Yeah.
I mean, you were nearly a Paralympian, weren't
very
you,
nearly,
Jack?
Very nearly.
So close.
Got very close.
Coulda, shoulda, woulda.
Good, yeah, I had a good run.
Would you be feeling disappointed if you were an athlete there now?
No, definitely not. I mean, from my experience of being an athlete, the great sense of pride it brings, racing, training, competing for your country, completely overrides everything else.
And there's camaraderie with the rest of the athletes as well.
Of course.
I mean, that must be special.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So why didn't you make it? Let's just dwell on that for a moment. I got as far as I could.
I competed, I raced, I had good fun.
What were you competing in?
I trained in every distance from 100 metres up to marathon, but I specialised mostly, what I won most of my races in was longer distance. So if it was on the track, it was sort of 800 metres to 5,000 metres, and on the road it was marathon. That was what I specialised in. Yeah, no, I have not regretted my choice at all. You know,
I love my job. You got what, fourth in the 800?
Yeah, fourth in the 800 metres for the World Championship.
Alan knows. He's followed
you. Yeah, we had discussions earlier.
Oh, shut up. I'm feeling... I'm making myself look intelligent. Not like we talked about it.
We haven't, no.
But to be fourth in the world...
Yeah.
I mean, that's not something to be belittled or put aside, right?
No, of course not.
And
I never...
As I'm concerned.
How old were you in 2012, then?
15.
Like 12.
Yeah, we got to start early. Ellie Simmons, what was she?
Yeah, she started at 13. 14,
yeah.
I started training for the Olympics, the Paralympics at 9, you know. That was when I first got on the track.
You say what there, Joanne?
Yeah! I was still in the womb at 9 years of age. How can anyone know that they want to train and be a Paralympian?
Sport was always something that I felt I was good at. You know, I was sure what I wanted to do, and basketball, tennis, table tennis, and all of the sports, I gave it a good go. I did the best I could.
Now tell us about the next story, something about a girl who lives in a bucket.
It sounds breathtaking. Right, let me go into this. I read about this the other day. It's a story that was brought to light in July.
Where did you read it? What
book? Is it on Channel 5?
You know when you sort of, it's late night and you sort of get onto that area of YouTube, you know,
never been there.
You've never been on that side of YouTube before?
No.
Barcroft TV was the publishers of the story. The girl who lives in a bucket. Okay, her name is Rama Haran. She's from Nigeria. She's 19 years old. She was born with her limbs didn't form properly. So she hasn't got arms at a normal length. She hasn't got legs at a normal length. But she has a normal sized torso and head. She can't walk. She can't crawl. She literally has to be dependent on being carried everywhere. And she's carried in a bucket by her family. And that's how she gets around.
Did they talk to her? What did she say about
this? Yeah, no, she's happy. She literally says she's very happy. She had a little interview with her brother, and they also interviewed her dad. And her dad works very, very hard. He works on a farm, but he basically, when they found out about all this, he sold every possession he had to try and find some medical care for her. And the doctors over there in Nigeria turned around and said that she's cursed. That was their best answer, was that she's cursed.
She's just carried around in a bucket.
Yeah, she's carried around in a bucket.
Is there nothing better that...
She had... someone last month gave her a wheelchair, but they put her in the bucket in the wheelchair.
Stop it.
I'm not even joking.
No, but I'm also thinking, how does she see... Is her torso tall enough that she can see out of this bucket? She's not... No, I'm being serious.
Yes. I'm going to get you a photo. I'm really going to get you a photo of this.
So you have
an understanding of what I'm talking about here. Right.
I have an understanding what you get up to after midnight, Jack, and you're... Oh, stop it. So I'm looking at the picture. There's a green bucket, and she's got her head poking out. She's wearing, like, a red onesie sort of thing, isn't she?
No, that's a...
What is it? I can't see from here. What have I said?
That's one of the religious, you know, the Muslim...
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, OK. Sorry. Not a burkini. Keep it in.
It's going with onesie, eh?
It's not a onesie.
I couldn't see from there. But the red and the green...
Through some of the photos.
I mean, yeah,
I wasn't joking, was I?
She's quite incredible.
Her eyebrows are on fleek.
No, she looks... I mean, she hasn't...
Very high-pitched voice. Don't know why that is. I was trying to find
out... She hasn't got a whole
video
body.
Of her talking.
YouTube video, the big interview.
Joanne, what are you saying?
If she doesn't have any limbs, maybe this is the wrong thing to say now, right? But what would be the advantage of her being in a wheelchair then?
So at least she could get pushed around, not carried in a bucket.
Yeah. Well, you can also get sip and puff ones.
Are wheelchairs not like a pain a lot of the time? Like, they can be kind of cumbersome, they don't fit in places aren't adapted to suit them. Whereas a bucket, you're just
She's never...
Whoa, yeah, but also it's about independence. And also Nigeria, you're probably right, it's going to be tough. I mean, I said sip and puff, they're the ones where you can control a wheelchair through just blowing.
Okay, but...
Right. Sucking.
Oh, okay.
So there are ways and means. It's more complex.
Yeah, fair enough.
Where's her body?
You say, where's her body?
Yeah.
Kate's passing me the picture now. Oh, I see what you mean, because that's quite a shallow... I hate to say it, it's more like a washing-up bowl.
Yeah.
Rather than a bucket.
Bowl, you know...
It's like a washing-up bowl, isn't
she? It is.
She's
super tiny,
body.
Isn't she?
Michelle
tiny. Yeah, sorry, Alan, I'm missing it on this. Joanne, are you looking this up online while we're talking?
No, I'm worried that my phone will, like, my phone, like...
just gone dark.
I want to, though.
Wow, okay, yeah.
Send you a link.
I was trying to figure out what her disability is. I did some research to try and find out what that might be.
Mm. It's called severe.
Severe, yeah.
Yeah. She doesn't need a badge, does she?
On that, I mean, on that note, I'm speechless, and I don't know.
Do we know where in Nigeria she lives? Is it a built-up area, or...?
No. Well, from the video, it wasn't. It was quite a run-down...
So wheels are probably highly impractical.
Yes, the wheelchairs seemed much better.
Seems to me that her family have been quite progressive and supporting her and doing the best they can with the resources that they've got.
And if everyone there is telling them, you know, that her family, that she's cursed and all of this, then they're, you know, it's incredible.
But the reason it was brought to light via Barcroft, firstly, and it became a known story, it was in the newspapers around the world, whatever, was that we could raise awareness that this girl is going through what she is, and her family's going through what she is. And so maybe there's a doctor out there who goes, I reckon I know what your disability is, and can give them more light and the family more light on what's actually happening and go from there.
Well, yeah. So if you know what her disability is, give us a shout. But also, are you carried around in a bucket? Drop us an email and let us know. So who knows? Joanne McNally is an Irish comedian based in Dublin. Listeners to 2FM's Chris and Cara show will know her as Jo Agony, the spoof agony aunt. And she's also part of the sketch show team Republic of Telly on RTE2 TV. She's currently performing her own one-woman show at the Dublin Fringe, where she's digging deep into her own experiences of therapy for a long-term eating disorder that she has. Joanne, let's start talking about your show, which gives a really fascinating insight into the therapy you've received. Tell us about it.
Well, I wrote an article for the Irish Times that was in last week, which was kind of like an extract from the show. Mm. And that's the piece that's kind of getting some attention, because often, I think in a lot of when you're getting therapy, they ask you to physically manifest the voice of whatever your addiction is. In my case, it was bulimia. So they want you to externalize this voice so that it doesn't sound like you're like yourself, you know?
So you were hearing voices, but the voice that you were hearing was your own voice.
Well, hearing voices, I was very, very badly bulimic. And I was locked in a very intense binge and purge cycle all day, every day. And
what is that? What's binge and purge?
So I would, any food inside me, I would send me into an absolute panic. I couldn't keep anything inside me. But the second I'd eat anything, I'd be filled with all this anxiety, and then I'd have to fill myself full of food, which is the binge part, and then purge it all. And by purging it, I was kind of releasing the anxiety. And then I'd get about half an hour of
purging is so that you're being sick, basically.
Getting sick, yeah. Okay. So then after that, I'd have about 30 minutes of peace, where I wouldn't feel anxious or nervous or worried about anything. And then it would start building again, and I'd eat something again, and it would just go on and on all day.
Wow.
So
how did anything?
I didn't. Like, I basically just stopped functioning then, and just kind of, my mum actually had to come into my house in town. Like, I'd stopped turning up for work. Mm. And my mum came into my house in town and basically put me in the car and drove me home at one stage. Like, I was gone. Mm. But the point was that I was still rationalising this behaviour to myself and telling myself that this was normal, that I could stop if I wanted to, that I was just on a diet, that I was working towards my ideal body. And so they're the voices that my therapist was saying, I need to externalise from myself, because they're destructive and they're not right. They can't be trusted. They're lying to me. Do you know that way?
Yeah.
So by externalising that voice, then it becomes something outside of you that you can kind of have, you can talk to and argue with and kind of shoot down. And I turned mine into Louis Walsh.
Hold on a second. So the voice of your eating disorder was basically Louis Walsh.
Louis Walsh. So there's this whole, like, you know, talk to your eating disorder. I hadn't gotten a period in like 5 or 6 years, and That was the thing for me, because it was like, I didn't care. There was holes in my teeth and all that jazz, and none of that bothered me, because I still felt like I was, it was all just, you know, no pain, no gain. But the period thing did start to freak me out, because I was sacrificing, if I wanted to have kids or anything, you know.
So you get it's things like holes in your teeth that are caused by the stomach acid coming up, and
yeah, and I'd massive welts across my knuckles, and like I looked, I thought I was in the best shape of my life. I looked absolutely horrific.
Is there a randomness of, because there's lack of nutrition, this must be really expensive, yet there's still a bit of you saying, but if I want a child. So there's a little bit of rationality still going on there.
Kind of. Like at this stage, like I was in therapy at this stage, and I knew something had to change. I was ready to listen at this stage. For a long time, I denied it all. And I say in the show, like, you know, I was asking my therapist why, even though now I know that there's something really wrong with me, that it's not a diet, that it's a mental health issue, why is it still the most important thing to me? Like, why am I prepared to sacrifice everything in my life to lose another 2 pounds, do you know? Like, there was nothing more important than this.
We all chortled a bit. So I'm just thinking of our international listeners. How would you describe Louis Walsh?
How would you describe Louis Walsh? He's an eating disorder. Louis is kind of like, that's the thing. I made my eating disorder like small and twee with a speech impediment. And like he kind of wore a tweed suit and kind of cutesy. Do you know that way? And you a bit stupid.
Sounds more like a leprechaun.
Well, when I started, you know, when I was reading your blog and they said to me, there was a sentence, I thought, oh, she's going to turn this into a happy-go-lucky little leprechaun. Louis Walsh is a judge on a talent show. He is Irish as well, isn't he?
He's quite short.
He's not proper short.
Yeah, he's not Simon Minty short, sure, no, but proper. Yeah.
I think he's a good one to use, because I like Louis, but he's a bit silly. Do you know that way? Mm. Like, he is a little bit silly, I think.
He encourages you to give 110%, and he can see you being a star.
So this is it. So in the show, I have an actor.
I like you.
Yeah, I have an actor doing a voiceover of Louis, so that when we're conversing,
nice,
it's Louis, and he's like, you're 100%. You look like a bulimic. You act like a bulimic. You're going to go all the way. So he keeps kind of like encouraging me, even when I feel like maybe it's time to kind of stop. He'll kind of bring me back in with these words of encouragement.
How were you in, like, one thing that I find very interesting is when you were doing, you know, you're in the throes of it and you're doing this all the time, how are you still in denial about what's happening?
Because you begin to think, I knew this wasn't normal, but I figured I was doing it to myself. So I had started it so I can stop it.
And you were just choosing not to stop it.
Yeah, and I was like, tomorrow.
Yeah.
Okay, this one last time, but I control this. I'm in control of this. This is embarrassing. Get yourself together.
This is like
snap out of it.
Someone who can't stop drinking, someone who can't stop smoking.
Exactly.
There's always a, we can postpone. I am in control, but I'm not.
I'm just choosing not to right now. Right.
It was an addiction. Yeah. Like, to the point where, you know, eventually when I did I'd have to be sick in the house, and then my mum wouldn't let me close any of the doors in the toilets, so then I'd just be sick in mop buckets in utility rooms, and then she found plastic bags of sick in my room, and then we couldn't close any of the doors, and like I think a lot of people think that bulimia is just, oh, I had a chip too many there, I'll just go and get rid of it, whereas in my case and a lot of cases there's a lot more to it than that.
And were you doing it because you wanted to eat all the chips? And do you
it's
not
hard. It's kind of a complicated one. Even at this stage, I'm not sure I understand it completely. But I just know that I had so much weird anxiety around food. I was anorexic bulimic, so the difference is, I'm simplifying it now, but anorexics want to lose weight. Whereas bulimics want to maintain their weight, and they'll end up kind of binging, and they might just binge once in the evening maybe, or whatever it is. So often bulimia can go undetected because their weight mightn't drop that significantly. Mm. Whereas I was anorexic bulimic. So I was very underweight, but also locked in this binge and purge session. To this day, like, their eating disorders are quite complicated. There's, you know, I didn't develop an eating disorder because I read too much Cosmo. Like, there's more going on than that.
So what was it, do you think? What was the trigger that made you? Did you see somebody and think, I want to be like them?
No, because, and I would never have believed this at the time, but an eating disorder isn't actually about your weight. Now, I remember years ago someone saying that to me, and I completely, I just didn't believe that. I wasn't sick at the time. But in hindsight now, it really isn't. There was some, I wasn't coping with life. So I was using this, I was controlling my body as a way of coping. It was a coping skill. And I thought it would make me, Louis was rationalising this behaviour to me, saying it was going to make me more attractive, that I would be more successful, I would just be a better person if I just, you know, sorted my weight out, everything else would fall into place, I'd be more punctual, I'd be a better friend. Like, I genuinely believed everything stemmed from this. So I just became, I put all my worth in it. And I thought it was a vanity thing, but actually it was a mental health issue.
When you were doing that therapy, because I'm jumping ahead here, because eventually you do sort of overcome Louis, but was there a period where you would just naturally converse with Louis, even when you weren't in therapy? Was it that real?
I still talk to myself all the time, openly. And my housemate the other day was like, it's really weird, I wish you'd stop. Like, I can't, because I'm so used to being locked into this dialogue with myself. Don't do it. Don't get sick today. Get sick today. Don't get sick. Do it this once. Okay, look, do it this once and don't do it for the rest of the day. You don't need to do it. You do need to do it. Like, it was, yeah. Once you identify it as something outside of yourself, you start talking to them. Yeah, absolutely.
And why did it help to have it as Louis rather than yourself?
Well, it helped me because I was writing at the time and I have a fairly active imagination, and I enjoyed writing about it, so I could kind of flesh out this character, and it distracted me from the whole thing, that I could write about it and I could make people laugh by telling them about it, and that's why he kind of grew arms and legs, do you know that way?
Yeah. And so were you hiding the bulimia, or was it common knowledge that this was something you did?
I hid it for a long time as best I could. And again, I talk about it in the show, like the lies you'd be telling to hide Louis.
What kind of thing?
Like, I mean, there wasn't, like, my housemates, God love them. Where's my sliced pan? Where's my bag of porridge? Where's the freezer? Do you know what I mean? Like, there was, unless it was nailed down, I ate it. And I'd no money to replace it because every cent I had went on food. And they were really understanding. But, like, eventually I kind of, like, slipped off the face of the earth as such. Like, I was functioning, well, of course I never was, but I thought I was. Mm. Functioning.
Did your housemates just think that you ate loads?
No, they knew. Yeah, and they were like, what will we do? And they were in contact with my mum and talking about, you know, paying to put me in somewhere and all that jazz. I remember one time I didn't turn up to work for like 4 days, and eventually I went back in. And I told my boss that my brother had an affair, and so his wife had taken the kids, and like I had to stay home and sit with him, whereas actually I was just sitting home getting sick for 3 days.
So we took a couple of sharp intakes of breath. You've turned this into comedy now, and I think disability. Yeah. So how did that happen? Does it work? Do people have to breathe in for a second and then go with you?
I'm not. I think they say comedy is tragedy plus time. Mm. And my time is about 5 seconds. So
5 seconds.
It is, like,
brilliant.
Sometimes when I'm fighting, when I was fighting with my ex-boyfriend, which we loved doing a lot, he'd be like, I don't understand, you're crying and you're laughing. I don't understand what's happening. So it's that kind of thing. And like, I just enjoy making it funny, because there are parts of it that were funny, and I'm not mocking eating disorders. It's my experience. Mm. But I'm just telling it in a funny way, like the Louis stuff. And I mean, the show is, I had my first preview there on Friday, which was really exciting because it was the first time I got to put it up in front of an audience. And they're all laughing along with me. And yes, of course, there are kind of dark, sad bits, but it lifts again. And I came out of it, and I wouldn't change a minute of it, to be honest.
Is there a puppet? Or what is Louis? How does he manifest himself?
So Louis there's no, you know, he's just a voiceover.
Just a voice. Got you. Okay.
And how are you doing now? Do you count, is it like an alcoholic that you have to count days from not being sick, or...?
I would say I'm in recovery. I'm in recovery, but I will have to watch it for the rest of my life. Like, it was such a dark, serious time, I guess, that I would just never want to go back there. And it's obviously how I cope with stress. So I just have to watch it. Like, I take a lot of medication. I don't put myself in situations where I'd overeat. Like, I manage it. I'll manage it for the rest of my life. But that's okay. I'm happy to do that.
Well, and the bit in the blog, you do, you rationalise and you beat Louis, which is just joyous. When you, I didn't expect it to go that place, and I kind of thought, oh, this is so cool.
Yeah, we kill Louis. Yeah, we do. We have to.
Spoiler.
Because he's a liar.
Yeah,
you can't
exactly.
trust him.
What would you do if you met him in real life, though?
Well, it's funny because a lot of the papers here picked up the story and they're running with it with my picture and a picture of Louis Walsh, and they're like, the death of Louis Walsh. So I think a lot of people think he's croaked it and that potentially I did it. But I love, imagine I got him to do the voiceover. Wouldn't that be amazing?
That would be cool. Mm.
Yeah, I think he's probably a bit busy.
I'm curious. Have you talked to other people with eating disorders about this show? How do they react?
I got a lot of... about the show... Yes. So I got a lot of girls emailing me after I wrote the article, thanking me, saying... Because there's a difference, I think, with anorexia and bulimia. Bulimia, it's not as sanitised as anorexia. So it's not as easy to deal with... artistically or to talk about. You can be, I certainly was very embarrassed about it for a long, long time because I felt it was dirty, do you know that way? So when these girls are emailing me, they're actually saying thanks for being honest about it and talking about the reality of it. I've had nothing negative so far anyway.
Sorry, Joanne, when you said sanitize, are you saying that anorexia is accepted whereas bulimia is not? Are you almost, I don't know what you're saying.
Sorry, sanitized, I mean as in it's a less messy mental health issue. You're not making yourself vomit all day. Mm. So it's kind of an easier one to talk about, if you know that kind of way. It's an easier one to deal with in media. Whereas when you're talking about vomit, it's not as easy to talk about, or it's not as easy to admit, I guess, is probably
I think it makes people feel a bit more gross, doesn't it?
Like exactly.
You know, you can sort of think about not eating for a while, but some people get funny about sick.
But ironically, this is going to get me in trouble, but there's an irony that you presumably look relatively modest, average weight, whereas someone with very severe anorexia can look in a really bad way.
Well, I actually, because I had the two, I was very underweight, actually. But I remember that one of the therapists saying to me as well, she was saying, when you make yourself so thin, when you drop your weight like that, you're saying to the world, look at me, there's something wrong with me, I need help. And I didn't believe her at all. I was like, I'm on a bloody diet. Like, I'm not trying to say anything. Mm. But I see pictures of myself back then and I was trying to say something because it was very obvious I was sick, you know?
Mm. What do you think when you see those pictures now?
It gives me the shivers. It gives me the shivers that I was that size and that I was still on a mission to lose more weight and that I still was, like, every morning and evening, all I would do is just feel my bones and my rib cage and my hip bones and to make sure everything was there. And they were like my barometer of, like, you know, you're doing okay, keep working towards it. It was a shape annihilation was the mission. It's scary, to be honest. Like, it is kind of scary. What you can rationalise to yourself.
Yeah.
We want to come and see it. How do we see you? How do we find out about your show?
So the show is called Bite Me and it's on as part of the Dublin Fringe Festival in the Project Arts Centre in Temple Bar from September 21st to September 24th. And then hopefully it'll tour after that. So hopefully it'll get over to the UK as well.
And social media, where do we find you?
So my personal and my comedy page are Joanne McNally on Facebook and then I'm Joanne McNalls on Instagram and Joe McNally on Twitter. And all the information for the show is on them as well.
Cool.
Brilliant. Well, if this conversation has affected you or you want to talk about your own eating difficulties, take a look at Beat. Their website is beat.co.uk or you can call their helpline if you're in the UK on 0345 634 1414 or they have a youth line 0345 634 7650. And don't keep it to yourself. Please do reach out and talk to somebody. It always makes things better.
Thank you so much, Joanne.
Thanks a million for having me.
It's a pleasure. Good luck with the show.
Thank you.
That's the end of today's talk show. Kate and I are back at the beginning of October, but you can hear shorter weekly podcasts on the BBC Ouch feed, brought to you by the rest of the team, including some from Kathleen in Rio. She's in Rio
Can't
in the Paralympics.
It's no fair. Why did she get to go?
She's going to be so busy. I may not get anything. Let's hope we hear from her.
Yeah, let's hope she comes back. But thank you to the rest of our guests. Jack, thank you very much.
No worries.
Lovely to see you. I'm sure we'll be seeing you again
very soon,
crazy internet stories. And Alan, thank you too.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Thank you. Now, before we end, pick up your phone right now or use your computer to rate us and leave us comments on iTunes or whatever service you might get your podcast from. And please share it on your own social media so other people who might like the programme can find us. If they don't know about us yet, I mean, who wouldn't know about us yet? I mean, I suppose it might be somebody around. Anyway, email us and tell us how you're spreading the word to ouch@bbc.co.uk.
We're playing out with some music from a disabled artist, as we always do. This month it's from Joe Kenny. Joe is visually impaired. He's a singer, multi-instrumentalist and songwriter hailing from County Armagh in Ireland. He now lives in Belfast, and you can read more about him via the programme page for this podcast at bbc.co.uk/ouch, and this is called Turn It Around.
Until next time, goodbye.
Bye.
I thought he was 12.